You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Today on the show, Brett Ciancia will join us from Pick 6 Previews. He'll talk to us about what he's seen from Razorback football through 4 weeks. We'll also be joined by Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated to give us a preview of Notre Dame football ahead of this weekend's game. And it's never too early to look forward to next year. The 2026 opponents have been announced. We'll take a look at what the SEC had to say last night. First, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Before we get to Brett Ciancia, a few words here about Arkansas's 2026 opponents that were announced last night. This is the schedule for Arkansas next year. We don't know the dates yet, but these are the opponents. They're going to play home games against LSU, Missouri, Georgia, South Carolina, and Tennessee in conference play. We also know they've got non-conference games set up in Fayetteville against Tulsa and North Alabama, and they're going to play away games next year at Texas, Auburn, Texas A&M, Vanderbilt, and then they'll play a non-conference game at Utah early in the season next year. Of course, this is all part of the 9-game SEC schedule that's new in 2026. They're moving away from the 8-game schedule to the 9-game schedule. A few things that stood out to me. Number one, you might have noticed they're going to play Missouri at home and Texas away again next year. This happens sometimes when you get a schedule reset like this. It's never necessarily all black and white where you can make everything perfect. Sometimes you have to have this. We've seen it in baseball. For instance, this year, Arkansas played Missouri at Baumwalker Stadium for the second consecutive year. Saw it in baseball about 10, 12 years ago whenever Texas A&M and Missouri came into the league. There were 2 years in a row where Arkansas played A&M in Fayetteville. So this happens from time to time. I think for the most part, looking at all the opponents, there's not a whole lot of you'll play here 2 times in a row and then there. There are a few cases like that, but not a whole lot. But really the things that stood out to me other than that, no Ole Miss every year. We suspected this after Chris Lowe's report earlier in the week that said Arkansas's annual opponents were going to be Texas, Missouri, and LSU. That was the case. Arkansas are going to play Texas, LSU, and Missouri every year through at least 2029, before the 2030 season. The SEC, they'll reassess the annual opponents, and they'll see if those games continue to make sense on an every year basis. Arkansas also going to, of course, end every year matchups against Mississippi State, against Auburn. They played both of those teams every year since 1992. They're not going to play Texas A&M every year anymore, although they will play the Aggies next year. And then in 2027, that'll be the first time in almost 20 years that those teams have not played. A couple other things that stood out to me. Obviously, Vanderbilt, Arkansas going there next year. First time that they've gone to Nashville since 2011. 2027, Kentucky comes to Fayetteville. First time they'll come to Fayetteville since 2012. So 15-year gaps there in those two matchups. That's one of the things they're trying to address with this new 9-game schedule, is that you won't go a decade without seeing a team on your home field or you going to their home field. And then one other thing that stood out to me, 2027, Arkansas will play its first SEC game at Oklahoma. OU will come back to Fayetteville in 2029. Kind of an interesting thing here because Arkansas has also scheduled Oklahoma State and Tulsa in 2027. They're going to play all three of the Division I teams from the state of Oklahoma in that year at OU, at Tulsa, and Oklahoma State in Fayetteville. So, you know, those are some of the things that stood out to me. Obviously, people might ask, hey, when does Alabama come back onto the schedule? The Razorbacks are going to host Alabama in 2027, and they will go back to Tuscaloosa in 2029. You can read all about this on our website at wholehogsports.com. The headline says Arkansas football SEC schedule set through 2029. We're joined now by Brett Ciancia. He works for, or is the owner of Pick 6 Previews. They do a great job, by the way. If you haven't checked out Pick 6 Previews, check them out. Absolutely phenomenal work they do there. Brett, appreciate you being here. I wonder, through 4 games, what your impressions are of the Razorbacks.
Yeah, Matt, thanks for having me on. It's an exciting time of year here with conference play kicking off and, of course, a little non-league action with Notre Dame coming in. First meeting ever for Arkansas and Notre Dame, but first impressions from Arkansas, the offense is absolutely electric. You know, it's been a great coordinator job by Bobby Petrino. Talen Green, the way he glides down the field, the comparison I was making was maybe Vince Young. I don't want to put too much pressure on Talen Green, but I'm just saying body type, the way that on zone reads, he just glides with the ball and gets up chunks of 10, 15, 20 yards rushing like it's nothing, like it's effortless. That made me think of him. But, so far the offense is off the charts and my data. Defense has a lot of work to do. That shouldn't be a surprise to Arkansas listeners. Some of the effort levels have been missing on some key plays. And then statistically, it's a lot of below average numbers there. So, you know, one side of the ball looks awesome. The other side needs some work. But I think that kind of matches what you guys have watched as well.
When you see Arkansas lose games the way they have the last couple of weeks against Ole Miss and against Memphis, and the line between 2-2 and 4-0 is so thin, what do you think in terms of, like, how does that help form your perception of this team?
Yeah, well, you're right. They're so close to 4-0. It's got to hurt. It's got to sting even more. And you're talking about two key fumbles. In the Ole Miss game, going down, you're down by 6 points. You're driving around the 15-yard line or so, and T.J. Dottery knocks the ball out, an Ole Miss defender. That one arguably cost you that game. Maybe would have scored there to take a lead late. And then, of course, the Memphis game. Yeah, that's even more direct because a minute left, you're near the goal line, only down by a point. So even if he's stuffed there and doesn't score the touchdown, he'd get a game-winning field goal attempt from basically extra point distance. So two really key fumbles hurt. But, I mean, you want to think of it this way, too. A couple of possessions here and there could have flipped it so you weren't even in that situation where you're at a one-score game with lead fumbles. So, yeah, I mean, 4-0 was right there. It's 2-2. Luckily for the league, that only damaged you once, you know, sitting there with the Ole Miss loss being league. But, this game, it checks out where if I'm projecting forward with Notre Dame, I have Arkansas to cover. I mean, the line's around a touchdown. I think it's more like a field goal or within a field goal, especially with home field advantage. And because you look at what Notre Dame's done defensively, they've struggled worse than Arkansas on that side of the ball. So if you love points, if you love high scoring and yardage, I mean, this looks like the matchup of the week. It's going to be two great offenses versus two defenses trying to find their way.
Does it feel like this could be setting up for a letdown? Like we're going into this expecting a lot of points based on Notre Dame, A&M, and Arkansas Ole Miss, and Arkansas Memphis, where all of a sudden we turn around and it's like 17-14 in the fourth quarter?
Maybe. I mean, that's why college football is the best. It'll surprise you. You know, like you can do all the research, all the numbers you want, and you can watch every game, and then all of a sudden they drop a surprise. But if you're just going off the sample size we have, which is the four Arkansas games, the three Notre Dame games, they look like it's going to be a high-scoring game. And I guess Notre Dame, their defense played well against Miami. That performance is increasing in value when you look back because Miami has lit up all their other opponents outside of that Notre Dame opener. But if you watch them against Purdue, they looked confused pre-snap. They were moving around a lot, unsettled when the ball was snapped, bad pursuit angles. So they gave up a lot of points and yards to Purdue. And then, of course, the A&M game, it was just up and down the field for an Aggie offense that many had questions for coming into the year and last year had questions. So made Marcel Reed look like a Heisman contender, this defense. So what I've seen from Talen Green in the offense, I think we're in for points. And, I was wondering, too, if Arkansas would have a little bit of a letdown after the emotional loss and having your second loss. But there's just something about playing Notre Dame where I don't think any team ever has a letdown. It's like you're always going to get – Notre Dame's always going to get everyone's focus and their attention and their best performance. So with it being in Fayetteville, first meeting ever, I think it's going to be electric. So I don't see any letdown spot for Arkansas here.
I want to ask you about Memphis because it's – there's an interesting contrast between what the national people think about Memphis and the way Memphis is viewed here locally. And of course, Memphis in Fayetteville, it's not, you know, real far apart. Memphis has always been a program that I think if you're Arkansas, you look over there and say you should be able to beat those guys. Question number one, is Memphis the best candidate to be the Group of Five playoff representative this year? And then the second question is if they are they as talented as Boise State was last year when they had that designation?
Yeah, great questions. So I think first, when you're talking about this new non-AQ playoff spot, my mind always thinks Mountain West first. I think that's the toughest, the most physical conference from the non-AQ level. So I always open there, and of course Boise did it last year. I thought Boise would be back again this year, bringing so much of their roster back, and they came up short in the opener against USF. So With them out of the picture, I now focus on the AAC, the American Conference. And really, nobody wants to hold this spot because at first it was USF. They had the big win over Florida, so they held the top non-AQ spot. Then they went and got blown out by Miami, maybe shifted the attention over to Tulane, who had already beaten Duke, but then they got blown out by Ole Miss last week. So with Memphis's win over Arkansas, a 4-0 start, 4-0 against the spread, too. They're impressing so far you know, against expectation. And when you look forward, I like Memphis for this spot for two reasons. Home game against Tulane, home game against USF. So those other two contenders I told you about, they have to go into Memphis, both of them, one being a Friday night game, Tulane at Memphis Friday night, November 7th. So, yeah, they have home field advantage. They have the one less loss than their opponents here. So they have that mulligan in their pocket. But I think they're the odds-on favorite right now. In fact, I've moved them into that spot in my weekly Pick 6 Plus stats and info package. I have them as the non-AQ pick this week.
Saying nothing about Arkansas losing an 18-point lead in that game, just knowing what you know about Memphis, what you know about Arkansas, here locally, it's viewed as a really bad loss, a loss that Sam Pittman may not be able to overcome in trying to be the head coach again next season. Do you consider Arkansas losing to Memphis a bad loss?
It's tough because, you know, just at face value, if you were just saying Team X against Memphis, I don't think it's a bad loss. It's one of the top nine AQs, like we said, maybe a fringe ranked team at this point. But it's within the context of where Arkansas is at with their program built under Sam Pittman. I mean, I don't want to talk hot seat, but like there was pressure coming in this year. Mm-hmm. And when you look ahead, it's such a tough league schedule, SEC schedule, that you almost pencil in Memphis as a W. It's not a knock on Memphis, but you kind of need that one. If you're looking ahead to this SEC slate where you have road trips to Tennessee and to LSU and to Austin, Texas, and then you got to host A&M who's undefeated. And so there's not many, you know, hosting Notre Dame was a playoff candidate. There's not many easy weeks in this schedule where you're thinking Memphis has to be a win if you're going to chase down like an 8-win or a 9-win season. So that's what makes it a bad loss. Not that it's Memphis, just because Memphis is a solid team. But looking at Arkansas' schedule in the context of where they're at, it's like you got to have that one. So that's why it stings.
What have you seen from Arkansas defensively that's caused them so much trouble?
Well, yeah, I mean, against Ole Miss, at first you credit Ole Miss's offense. I mean, that's every year under Lane Kiffin is explosive. It's high scoring, and maybe it was tough playing against Trinidad Chambliss in his first Ole Miss game. Maybe there wasn't much tape on him, so that might have caught him by surprise. But there are times where you wonder about the effort and the pursuit angles, and maybe some missed tackles have been hurting them. So when you're looking at a stat profile, yeah, it's been a little bit underwhelming. You know, really breaking down against the run, that's caught my eye. You know, below average in yards per carry and rushing defense, and bottom 10 in the country in my explosive rushing defense. So allowing, you know, limiting long runs, they're bottom 10 in the country. So they got to get that fixed, especially before league play really heats up. And before Saturday with Jeremiah Love, one of the best backs in America, coming to Fayetteville with Notre Dame's offensive line. So that's what stood out. It's fixable, I think. I mean, it's kind of a maybe somewhat of an effort thing, but I think it's fixable. You have talent there on that side of the ball, and hopefully you can get that going to pair with what I think is one of the best offenses in America with Taylen Green at the helm.
You know, the last three opponents they played has had a running quarterback who's had some success against Arkansas. You know, it adds to that explosive run stat that you gave. Notre Dame, they don't have a running quarterback, but they got a great backfield, two really good running backs. How much different do you think it is preparing for a team that can run with its quarterback and a team that runs in more of a traditional manner?
Yeah, well, if I was a defensive coordinator, I'd rather the latter situation, the traditional run, because when you have a dual threat quarterback like you have with Taylen Green, it's like it's an extra defender, an extra guy you need to account for. And you can scheme up a perfect X's and O's play, but it's hard to account for a scrambler who's going to break it down and you know, break you down on third and long and scramble for 15 yards. So, and without that element, you can really lock in and tee off on a quarterback that's stuck in the pocket. And that's more CJ Carr. I mean, he's more of a pocket passer. Now, to his credit, their pass game has come in better than I thought it would. You know, when you watched Notre Dame last year and years prior, it was more about old-fashioned football, power run, and good defense. This time around, it's their passing attack that caught my eye. And they upgraded from the portal with Malachi Fields coming in, UVA's great receiver, Jaden Greathouse, another guy who has stepped up in his second year as a starter. So better talent at receiver than we're used to seeing for Notre Dame, and more of a stronger arm passer leads to more of a passing attack than you'd expect. So, but to answer your question, yeah, give me the pocket passer and let this defense tee off on him in the pocket. I'd much rather face that than the scrambler.
Do you have a good feel yet for who the team to beat in the SEC is?
Well, I wish we talked Saturday night around 10 p.m. We'll know, because I think Alabama-Georgia is going to be probably for a spot in Atlanta. And when you look back on this season, I think in the first couple weeks you would have said LSU, but and you got to be fluid with this as we're learning more from each game and each week, where LSU's wins now lost a lot of luster. I mean, you're talking a preseason playoff favorite with Clemson, now 1-3. And then Florida came in the top 25, and they're also 1-3 and ready to maybe change coaches. So those two headliner wins have now lost a lot of luster, and you look back on them, they were close too, and other teams have had blowout wins over those teams. So I've demoted LSU a little bit. They can earn it back with a win over Ole Miss Saturday, but for now I would lean Bama-Georgia at the top of this thing, and I would have said Oklahoma too. The way that they've played so far, their defensive line looks like the best in the country. But now, just yesterday, the news broke on John Mateer, their quarterback, needing a hand surgery. Could be out a month or two. I'm sorry, I think it was 3 weeks to 5 weeks. I don't want to overshoot that timeline. So, but that might cost a couple games in a league race. It might flip it. So I'm going to stick with Alabama-Georgia as the top two contenders, and we'll see Saturday night who prevails.
I wonder, when you look at a game like Ole Miss-LSU, Ole Miss great offensively, LSU great defensively, but then on the flip side, Ole Miss's defense is leaky and Ole Miss's offense is not being good at all. How do you evaluate a game like that? Do you lean more toward the team that has been able to score more points?
Well, I guess it's every game's different. The things I like about LSU so far, it's year two under their coordinator on defense, Blake Baker. They made him the highest paid coordinator in college football history last year and didn't convert. It's clicking now, though. It's paying dividends now. So I love their defense. They're going to be a great strength on strength going up against Ole Miss's offense. And I think they're going to stick with Chambliss. I know that Austin Simmons is coming back from injury, but this would be Chambliss's third start. Of course, Arkansas faced him. And again, last week he put up another 400 yards. So he's looking great, a quarterback, explosive receivers. They reload there every year from the portal. So that's really the strength on strength. If you look on the other side of the ball, that might determine it. I think I like LSU's offense against Ole Miss's defense if I had to do that matchup. So all that to say, I mean, I see more of a coin flip type game. I think Vegas agrees it's a slight Ole Miss lean, and that's probably home field advantage. So if I had to, there's probably some value with LSU as an underdog here.
Well, more in the SEC for you. I do efficiency ratings. I've got Vanderbilt as the best offense thus far, the third best defense. Are they legit, or is it just a matter of they haven't played tougher competition yet?
Well, I mean, yeah, maybe the competition level hasn't been that strong, but their margins of victory have been really impressive. I mean, going 4-0 and barely surviving is a lot different than what they have done. 4-0 with a blowout win over Virginia Tech and another blowout win over South Carolina. I know Lenora Sellers missed part of that game, but I mean, really, even when he was in there, they were suffocating that offense. So, yeah, I'm impressed. And like I said, it's more of the margin that I'm impressed with, that they are destroying their opponents, running up the scores, and the yardage totals look great. And yeah, look at it this way, too. They're top 10 scoring offense and top 20 scoring defense. So both sides of the ball getting it done. So I agree with you there. So far, so good. Many major tests coming for them, but I think they've already exceeded everyone's expectations.
Yeah, this isn't your dad's Vanderbilt team. This has been pretty impressive to watch them. Brett, you do a great job. Pick six previews. Appreciate you being on. Hope to have you again soon.
Yeah, of course. Anytime, and good luck, Arkansas. It's going to be a big one, Notre Dame, and good luck the rest of the way. It's a fun team to watch for sure with that offense.
All right. Thank you, Brett. We'll see you soon. When we come back, Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated will join us. First, another word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King. We are Soapbox. We are ShopCart. We are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. We're joined now by Tim O'Malley. He covers Notre Dame for Irish Illustrated. Tim, let's start with just kind of, it feels like with Notre Dame this year, it's not necessarily the Notre Dame team that we expected. Lots of high-scoring games, a high-scoring offense, but also a high-scoring defense. What have been your perceptions of the team through three games?
Yeah, the interesting thing is through camp, we don't see much of it anymore. When they start off with a good team, which is three of the last 4 years, we get kind of locked out of camp. They've started with Ohio State. They've started with, obviously, Texas A&M and this year Miami. So we didn't see much camp, but everybody we talked to, including coaches, but not just them, said the defense was way ahead of the offense. And the offense was struggling to find a starting quarterback between C.J. Carr, who we all predicted would win it, and Kenny Minchie. And the defense was all these adjectives like rowdy and dominant and, you know, offense 0 for 8 in the red zone, all these things. So we thought it would be a continuation of what has been built for 8 years, which is somewhere as the floor of solid defense and last year, great defense. Number one pass efficiency last year. Number one pass efficiency the year before. Right now, there is none of that on defense. There are, not that it matters in three games, but it does because they lost twice. They're 105th in pass efficiency defense. It bears no resemblance to what Al Golden had out there. And I think Notre Dame fans got a little spoiled because they had Mike Elko. Everybody knows Mike Elko. Clark Lee. Everyone knows Clark Lee. Marcus Freeman and Al Golden as their defensive coordinators over a 9-year period. So this has been a tough adjustment. If you told me that Notre Dame would be 1-2, I would have said, man, that offense just couldn't get it going, huh? They lost some games scored in the teens, but it is the opposite right now.
It feels a lot like at Notre Dame right now. It's similar to what we've seen with Arkansas. I mean, you could easily be undefeated. It's just a matter of you're getting beat, at least in the case of the A&M game, in a shootout. But basically, you know, it's a lot of late losses where this season could certainly be viewed through a different lens if you get four or five different plays go a different way.
Yeah, and I think it's good that they stopped. Marcus Freeman did mention that when they were 0-2. I think that's kind of the move when you're 0-2 is to say, hey, by the way, we lost to Miami by a field goal and A&M because we – I mean, they did drop an extra point on the game with go-ahead drive, which is just an absolute killer when you think about it. Everybody knows Tyler Buchner, of course, his story, going to Alabama and coming back. But I'm glad they've dropped that, and they're trying to kind of refocus on what is – they haven't mentioned this, but we consider this a four-game season starting now for Notre Dame. They weren't going to lose to Purdue unless something was tragically wrong with Notre Dame. So at Arkansas, Boise State, NC State, and USC. It's a four-game season. If you get through that and you have two losses as the now, I think, 22nd-ranked team, you're probably the 15th-ranked team, 14th-ranked team as things kind of shake out. And then they're just better than the other teams they play and have to avoid a fall there, of course. So they have a shot, but they don't have a shot with this defense as currently constructed. It must change. Like last year when they were 1-1, losing to Northern Illinois, you just thought to yourself, "What? How in the world did that happen?" You could kind of see them building for the next month where you're like, oh gosh, they are one of the five best teams in the country. They have they in no way resemble one of the five best teams in the country now because you can't play like that defensively and consider yourself that as such.
I was impressed with C.J. Carr when I saw him in the second half against Miami. Obviously, he struggled a little bit there, but I thought, you know, for being a freshman on the road, fourth quarter, you know, first start, played really well, I thought. And obviously, the offensive numbers are really good over the last two games. What do you see from him? And maybe are there still areas that you feel like he needs to grow?
Yeah, he's on the rise. This is probably, you know, a young quarterback's growth is never linear. It's never going to go straight line. But he is peaking right now. I think if Arkansas could have gotten him 3 weeks ago or maybe 3 weeks from now, we're getting a dip in someone's growth. He's playing his best ball. They have just started to really use his strength, which is he throws old school mid-range and deep balls very well. And when you have Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price running the ball and you're not playing around with the screen game too much, but you're hitting stuff vertically down the seams, you're hitting stuff down the post, he can throw it opposite hash. He's a really good pure passer. I don't know why they didn't use much of that against Miami. Probably just trying to protect him. I've also kind of wondered if they didn't think they could block Miami, which we found out as the game went on, they were not doing a very good job of blocking Miami. So you don't want to have a first-time starter getting killed at Miami either, and obviously trying to put it on C.J. Carr. But I think a lot more of the game is on Carr now. He only had to throw 12 passes against Purdue because it's Purdue, but I think it was 22 0.5 yards per completion or something along those lines. So he's on the rise. The key is if the Notre Dame offensive line can play well against Arkansas as it did against Purdue and most of the game against A&M, though I didn't think they were able to run block as well against A&M as we're used to. offensive coordinator Mike Denbrock said yesterday, I thought CJ had plenty of clean pockets in game two and three that he did not have in game one.
Are you surprised that the scores have been, and I'm talking about offensively for Notre Dame, have been so high when this is a team that coming into the season was thought to be a run-first offense?
Yeah, and Denbrock reiterated their run-first offense. He just believes they're an explosive run-first offense. And Jeremiah Love, everybody knows Love, I think, that's listening. Jadarian Price is the kind of – he is the backup. I like to point this out because he's never started a game. But he's a backup that averages about 8 yards a carry over the last 2 years, and he is a home run hitter. He is every bit as dangerous as Love once you hit the second level. He's just not as good at the first level where he can kind of pitter-patter his feet. He's been kind of – he's the guy that's saddled with stuffs. It took him six games last year to get a third down carry, which tells you quite a bit. In other words, he would look to anyone else. Now they had Riley Leonard, but it looked to anyone else besides him. This year, they're giving him the ball. He had three touchdowns, of course, against Purdue. You can discount that because it's Purdue, but 100-yard kickoff return. He's had one of those against USC as well. They have two very, very, very big play guys in the backfield. That's why they're run first. They're not run first in plotting like Riley Leonard last year, where it's third and five, and Notre Dame sometimes would say, all right, well, we're going to run Leonard twice, and that's 6 yards. It was a strange offense, and it was odd that it worked that well to get to the championship game, and it worked for one drive against Ohio State, I guess, where they just kind of shoved it down their throat for 18 plays. But it's a change now. Carr and the running backs, when I looked at the over-under of 64.5, and I've seen Arkansas's offense and Notre Dame's defense – and the way Notre Dame's offense is playing, I could not bet the under. I might not bet it if I was a bettor, but I could not bet the under the way these two defenses and offenses are playing.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be another shootout, which obviously both of them are used to. I want to ask you about Ty Washington, who transferred there from Arkansas. How does he fit into the offense?
So he didn't play much at Miami, but we found out it was because of a wrist injury. And we were surprised he didn't play at all because Notre Dame loves two tight ends. They have for a very long time in their running game. They'll probably have Washington on the field for half the snaps, I would say, in this game as a run blocker. Eli Raritan's the starting tight end. There's no doubt there. But Washington's snaps have gone up. I think it was 40 against Purdue, which is a lot because, you know, they were up by so much. Nobody played more than 40, 45 snaps. He is really a second tight end run blocker for Love and Price in this situation. Now, he caught a third down pass in the second half it was from Kenny Minchie, the backup. So you're getting into the weeds here where you're looking at his contributions to the passing game, but he is definitely involved in the run game. I would think Arkansas fans would see him. You probably get 75 snaps in a game like this. I would say you'll see him 35 of those snaps out there blocking for Love and Price.
Arkansas, you know, they're familiar with this team, whether it be Washington or some of the personnel on the team, whether it be Washington, whether it be Chris Ash, who was here for a defensive coordinator position under Brett Bielema. Marty Biagi was here when Bobby Petrino.
Right, forgot about Biagi being there.
Yeah, Biagi, he was a GA here. They really loved him here when Petrino was the head coach. I want to go back to Ash because it seems like what they expected out of his defense is certainly different than what they're getting. What is it about, like, where has the disconnect been between what they thought they were going to get defensively and what we've seen on the field?
So when he won his press conference in the spring, which you should do because he replaced the Broyles Award winner. Speaking of Arkansas familiarity, he replaced the Broyles Award winner, Al Golden. And he brought back maybe 8 of the key 14 guys. Of course, you lost Xavier Watts, which mattered a lot, Riley Mills, Jack Kaiser. But you brought back enough guys that made a playoff run where he just said, this is Notre Dame's defense. I'm just here to help enhance it. I'm not reinventing the wheel. A lot of the things we figured we would see with Al Golden, we have not seen with Ash. Now, I get that because you have to put your own stamp on it. But what Notre Dame fans have heard, and we still don't know if this is true, is somewhere along the way in camp, they began changing some beliefs in the back seven defensively and how they were teaching things. And when you say the word disconnect, I don't know if that's true or not, but the disconnect, when you look at Notre Dame players doing this, looking around, looking back, trying to point when the play is about to start, you never saw that under Al Golden. I mean, they had pros, but the reason they were so good is they had graduate-level football players. I don't mean necessarily graduate students. They would hit the ground running with guys that were teaching 500 classes at safety, linebacker, defensive end. They knew how to run this defense. It does not seem like that right now at all. Once again, it's Purdue, so we're getting the weeds. But in the second half against Purdue, you saw less of it. I think they only had two explosive plays in the first half. Purdue had 13 plays over 10 yards, which as Purdue, that is not something you could imagine from a Notre Dame defense. A&M had 18 in the game. Purdue had 13 and a half. So that was when I think most Notre Dame fans kind of totally turned on Ash's first three games. There was a scene where Ash slammed his iPad down and it seemed like Freeman slammed an iPad. There was a lot of stuff going on the iPads. So it has been a angry, it's an angry lynch mob right now for Chris Ash through 12 quarters, but they do play a little better in the second half. And I know, you know, halftime adjustments are great if you can, if that's what matters, but you got to make series to series adjustments these days. And unfortunately for Ash, that was Al Golden's mantra. And now everyone loves Al Golden in South Bend because he said halftime adjustments are meaningless. You got to make them series to series. So that defense just doesn't look like we thought it would in August. So they really need to make some strides because this is another potent offense they're going to face.
Kind of one of those games with their matchups within the game. Sam Pittman was the offensive line coach at Arkansas when Chris Ash was the defensive coordinator. That's kind of an interesting deal. Unbiage, one other thing, another note of him in Arkansas, he was North Texas special teams coordinator whenever North Texas pulled off the fake fair catch punt return touchdown during the Chad Morris years here. So
I'm glad you brought that up because he's bringing something to this game. So Martin Biagi is a mad scientist, man. he has Marcus Freeman backing him to do whatever he wants. I know, I'm sure if Arkansas fans watched Notre Dame games last year, it was in January probably, you probably remember the Georgia game with the 11 on, 11 off play. And they will do anything at any point. So I think it's coming because I think they feel like they need it now. So I think you're going to see something from Marty Biagi in this game.
I was listening to you a few weeks ago. You were on Sirius XM with Dari Noka and Roy Philpott before the Miami game. And you said something to the extent, correct me if I'm wrong, but basically the one area of Notre Dame that you were most concerned about going into the season was the interior of the defensive line. Like the depth maybe wasn't quite as good there as it was at the other positions. Maybe what's happened elsewhere defensively where that is not the only concern?
That's a great question because although that's not a strength, I called them five backups. They have five rotation members. A lot of Notre Dame fans got mad at me. Backup was the wrong word, but they have five rotation guys, and that is how they're playing, five rotation guys. But they're not the reason Notre Dame has lost. I mean, Notre Dame is not giving up chunk gains on the ground. We expected the defensive ends to have a much bigger impact. Bryce Young was a true freshman last year. He's Bryant Young's son. He was 6'7", 235 last year. He's blocking punts, running around, athletic, covering kicks. He's about 6'7", 275 now, and simply because he has not been a force off the edge, we all believe he gained too much weight. Of course, that's anecdotal evidence. Boubacar Traore, who missed the whole playoff run, he tore his ACL in September. He has been good. He hasn't been quite as explosive as we thought. We just felt the ends, they could go five or six deep on the end, would allow them to have such a good pass rush that the secondary, only losing Xavier Watts. I use the air quotes because Xavier Watts was the 23 National Defensive Player of the Year and last year a unanimous All-American. That's a lot to lose at safety, but that's really what they lost back there. So we thought Notre Dame would hit the ground running a little bit, and they have not. I did a insider's report for our sister site at 24/7, and Leonard Moore is the guy to watch. He missed the last game against Purdue because he rolled his ankle. Number 15, sophomore corner. He replaced Benjamin Morrison last year, and somehow he was better than Benjamin Morrison. He is a true All-American, but he did not play last week. He is the lone, hate to categorize it this way, but he is the true bright spot of the secondary at this point, whereas last year you'd be arguing to figure out who the bright spot in the secondary was. So the biggest surprise is how the secondary is played, and as always, all Arkansas fans know this, that's tied to your pass rush. But not 100%. There's still a lot of room, we feel. There's just open receivers that did not exist in the past. And it's been vexing for Irish fans and people trying to figure out what's going on.
What's the feeling up there in South Bend about this game? Maybe among the fans?
Yeah, I think they know it's going to be high scoring. The trust in Ash is low. The trust in Carr right now and the running game is high. They also feel like, you know, A&M got them. But Notre Dame fans, because they hate Miami so much, feel that if Dembrock would have leaned into Jeremiah Love, Jadarian Price, and CJ Carr as he is now, they would have beaten Miami, and Miami would not be number two. So Notre Dame fans probably feel like they should be 2-1. I think they had a better chance of beating A&M. I just thought Miami's defensive line took it to them, and they lost the game. Notre Dame could have, I put it this way, Notre Dame could have stolen the Miami game because they got it to 24-24 with 2 minutes left. They probably should have beaten A&M. But even if they beat A&M 41 to 34, 40 to 34, or overtime game, you still have all the problems. All those defensive problems still exist no matter what. So they probably are where they belong. I feel like if Notre Dame loses this game, it will not be 24-23 where the defense comes out and plays great. If they lose this game, the hot seat for Chris Ash is just going to be incredible, because if the score is in the 20s, Notre Dame is going to win. Mm. That's how they normally bring. That's how they play football. They drag you into the water and drown you, usually, when they're a good team. Mm-hmm. When you get into that 38-35, they do not win many games when it's that high scoring. It is few and far between. And I wish I would have looked this up. I don't remember a 64.5 point spread. I mean, not spread, excuse me, over under mm-hmm. for Notre Dame. I don't remember one. It's just not their style of game. So they probably have to win a couple games that way this year, though.
And even that over, or that total point, that feels a little bit low based on what these two teams have done.
Yeah.
Let's get you out of here on this. Notre Dame is a unique team, obviously. I feel like they're one of those teams, there's a handful of these, that they get their opponent's best shot at 12 times a year. I wonder what it's like covering a team like that. And especially going on the road into a situation like this week where they've never been to this town.
Yeah, we were, there is no one, I guess that's a pretty good slate this week, but there's no one that didn't anticipate a primetime game for Notre Dame here. Notre Dame writers go somewhere and we're covering Navy in primetime. So we thought, of course, it was going to be a lubed up Arkansas crowd at 7:30 at night. But I, for one, am glad to hear it's an open air press box. It won't be 96 degrees. 11 a.m. kickoff, that cannot help the tailgating and the crowd, I wouldn't think that much. But yeah, they get the best shot all the time. Go to places like, Miami, people are going to hate me for saying this for Miami, but Miami's a front runner program full of fans. And when Notre Dame comes to town, that place is absolutely crazy. Mm. It's Notre Dame, and you could have Virginia Tech in there and it's half full. So we do see that a lot. We've seen Clemson has good crowds, but we've seen Clemson crowds take over Notre Dame games. Florida State was wild the last couple times Notre Dame came there. So when we travel to cover Notre Dame, it's a lot of fun. I expect a great crowd because Arkansas has not had Notre Dame there ever. I do expect it to have been better if it was 7 o'clock at night. When we went to Georgia in 2019, that was maybe the most electric thing I've ever seen covering a college football game. And Notre Dame had never been there. That's kind of what we thought was going to happen with Arkansas coming up here. If they ever go to LSU with Brian Kelly, that will be a new world, of course, of what's going on. But yeah, it's fun to cover them because you do see a lot of things. Light shows that they debut with. A lot of people retire their best player's number when Notre Dame comes to town. Pitt is retiring Aaron Donald this year, so it's like every time Notre Dame goes somewhere, it's, Desmond Howard's getting his number retired. So those things happen a lot. You get a lot of alternate uniforms. So it's been fun. I've been looking forward to this trip for a while because in 2020, when Arkansas was supposed to come to South Bend, I was on a lot of Arkansas radio shows. People trying to find a way, will this game happen? I'm like, I don't think it's going to happen, man. But it will happen here in the future, so that's great. But I'm really looking forward to coming down to Fayetteville. I've had this trip planned 10 months, I think, right now. So, yeah, this should be fun.
You'll be happy to know it's not a jersey retirement, but they're bringing Darren McFadden back in a few weeks for the Texas A&M game.
I'm sure Matt Jones and everybody else in the world is going to show up at this game, too. That happens every time.
I'm sure a lot of people will be there. Lou Holtz is supposed to be there this weekend, a tie between.
Yeah, he came to A&M. It was not magic for Notre Dame. That makes a lot of sense, though, to have Lou Holtz come to the Arkansas-Notre Dame game. I'm sure he would love to attend that, of course.
Tim, it was great talking to you. Safe travels here to Fayetteville, and we'll see you Saturday.
Hey, thanks a lot. Looking forward to it. Open air press box. I love it.
Yep. Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. We appreciate him being with us, and we appreciate you being here. Hope to see you again on our podcast tomorrow or at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everybody.